Welcome to the Norris Group Real Estate Podcast, a show committed to bringing you insights from thought leaders shaping the real estate industry. In each episode, we'll dive into conversations with industry experts and local insiders, all aimed at helping you thrive in an ever-changing real estate market, continuing the legacy that Bruce Norris created, sharing valuable knowledge and empowering you on your real estate journey. Whether you're a seasoned pro or a newcomer, this is your go-to source for insider tips, market trends, and success strategies. Here's your host, Craig Evans.
Hey, I want to thank everyone for stopping by today and checking out our new podcast. We are super excited. We've got a great guest with us today. We've got Carlos Diaz from Ridgewood Property Investments. Listen, Carlos is a seasoned real estate investor and proud owner of Ridgewood Property Investments, a company that buys, fixes, and flips properties in Southern California with an emphasis in the Inland Empire. He's a licensed real estate agent, and he will on occasion represent buyers and sellers in a traditional manner as well. Carlos is originally from Hawthorne, California, son of a hardworking immigrant parents from Mexico. Growing up in the inner city taught him many life lessons and credits his parents for his work ethic and navigating the neighborhood gang violence of the 90s. After graduating high school, Carlos worked many odd jobs, but finally landed a career in logistics. And when his company announced they would move operations to Ontario, Carlos saw this as a way out and a chance for a fresh start in 2008. After years of obsessing over the real estate industry, Carlos bought his first rental property in 2011. Always dreaming of quitting the traditional 9-to-5 job, he decided to dedicate more time to investing, working two jobs to save enough to launch his flipping business, which he funded 100% for 2 years. In an effort to grow his business, he would discover advantages of leverage and in 2022 became a full-time real estate professional, finally quitting that 9-to-5 job. Carlos is married and has two kids. Carlos, my friend, it is great to have you on today. I'm grateful that you took time out of your schedule to be with us. Our show, we want to bring a variety of content and guests from the real estate world. And so because part of what we want is we want people to know that we all come from different backgrounds and stations in life, and I want them to hear your success story, right? So if it's good with you, let's jump in and get started, okay?
Let's get started. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Carlos, listen, from your bio, we know that you came from humble and sometimes dangerous beginnings. Tell us a bit about growing up in Hawthorne. How tough was it having, you know, your formative years in that environment? You know, and for those of us that aren't from Southern California, you know, I'm from South Georgia, right? So tell me about that environment and all of our listeners all over the country. Tell us about what that environment looks like and how you came there.
Right. So we moved a lot in the beginning, and anywhere from West LA to Venice. And then when we landed in Lenox and then finally in Hawthorne, right, it was pretty much a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But in the 90s, being low income, you can only afford certain areas, right? And these areas were typically gang infested. And that happened up until my early 20s, right? In the sense to where it was difficult to navigate because it really didn't matter where you went. If you saw left, if you saw right, it was in front of you. It was in your face, right? And Joey and I were speaking about it to where it was, now looking back on it, it was a stressful time for any child, any teenager. It becomes stressful. And I want to say it got to the point where you become immune to it. And it's just a norm. It's just a norm. And it was suffocating without me even knowing it up until the point to where it literally felt like I wasn't able to breathe.
Wow.
And those stresses, now looking back on it, I don't think anybody should ultimately have to go through it. Right. That still exists today, unfortunately, but it's just a way for you to see the reality of what truly goes on in these communities, right? At the end of the day, there are these communities, and from what I've been able to see, it doesn't matter what inner city community it is, they go through the same struggle. It's very similar.
Well, what do you think is the number one thing as a kid growing up? You know, I mean, I know the choices. We all make choices, right?
Right.
It's our choice individually as how we live and what we do. But what do you think was the one thing that kept you kind of on that straight and narrow, so to speak?
100% my family.
Okay.
So I read a passage in one of John Maxwell's books where it says your family gives you stability.
Yep.
And I truly feel that that did help me to be able to navigate, right? It got to the point where obviously there was a lot going on in that environment and you do get caught up, but it's faster for you to come to that realization that what you're doing isn't right and it's going to lead you nowhere. And
Right.
I felt that that family backing or my family as my backbone really did help.
So, was it mom and dad? Was there aunts, uncles, cousins? What do you think was the biggest group that kind of helped pull you and keep your head on right, so to speak?
Oh yeah, 100% it was mom and dad.
Yeah.
Mom and dad, because there were some family members that unfortunately they were in the same environment, right? And caught up in certain things to where, you know, they're closer to your age range and they're more like your peers, right? But with mom and dad really having a stronghold on my upbringing, I feel that really did help me.
So, what do you think is the biggest lesson that you took from mom and dad?
You said it earlier, choice, right?
Okay.
Where you have the choice, but it got to the point to where I felt that they raised me. They felt that I feel they gave me enough tools and raised me correctly to when I came across certain situations, they trusted that I would know how to handle it, right? So you, like you said, we all have choices.
Yep.
And once you have that choice, if you take that step back and really think about what you're going to do and what's going to happen, which I feel a lot of people don't, they just react, right?
Right.
I feel that helped me a lot.
And that's interesting. You know, I've never really gotten into a lot of my background from growing up, things like that. You know, because like I said, we all got choices, and you know, I didn't always make the greatest choices growing up, right? My family lived and guided me one way, but I chose to do things that were quite frankly
Right.
pretty dumb a lot of times, you know, that got me into a lot of trouble. So I think that's interesting that looking back, you're crediting that process to your mom and dad and the kind of the vision and the guide that they pushed you through in that, you know. So as you were growing and in that environment, was college really an option for you?
So I want to say it was a thought. It was a thought that was never really taken serious. Once again, that was a choice, right?
Sure.
I did start, you know, with the whole junior college thing. I want to say I went to El Camino College for I want to say a year, studying fire and emergency technology. So I wanted to be a firefighter. But that's as far as it went past that year. It didn't go past that year, I should say. A lot of things happened to where I had to make another choice,
Yep.
and I had actually got accepted into that fire academy. But at the time, that's when the company made the switch over to Ontario. So that's where the fork in the road was. At that time, I want to say LA County and LA City had put all EMS on a hiring freeze. So I didn't really know where that was going to go once I finished the academy. Was I going to have a job? Chances were very high that I was, but it was going to be somewhere like in the mountains, right? Doing forest fires. So
Yep.
that's something I didn't see myself doing. So that choice was made, and I just came over to the Inland Empire.
So you were really kind of forced into like I got to pick or choose something here pretty quick then. So
Right. At that time, yes.
yeah. Well, so let me ask you this: growing up in the environment that you were growing up in, and you know, I here's part of you know, Carlos, why I want to dive into this some is you know we've talked a lot about with. Some unbelievably extremely successful people on our show in the last several months and very honored that they take time with us and stuff, right? But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where we've come from, we all started somewhere, right? And
Right.
that's where I think when we're talking about somebody that's started with the background and the humble beginnings that you started, that's where I really wanted to get your story out there, right? So, so as you were growing up in the environment that you're living in, and so again, if I can walk back, I mean, Hawthorne, how bad of an environment is that? I mean, is it a
So Hawthorne, the city, isn't too bad. It's how you want to see it. It's either the beginning or the end of the South Bay, right?
Okay.
The neighboring city would be Lenox, and that's where I was at for 8 years. So that's pretty much what I knew. It was literally across a major street.
Okay.
And you were in Lenox, right? So all that bled over, and it was difficult, man. Our neighbors in drive-bys, we lived in a back house, which is what I wanted to touch on, you know, a lot of choices. My aunt owned the front house, right? Okay. And she was a single mom. My cousin was older, and he was hanging out with the bad crowd. So you would see all these guys crowd up in our their front yard, right? So it was a constant thing every weekend, multiple times during the day. It was stressful. At the end of the day, it was stressful. You become immune to it, but that's all you saw. And it got to the point to where that's all I thought there was, right? It wasn't until my later teenage years that I actually started to leave the city, drive to other cities, drive to other neighborhoods, and be able to see, hey, you know what? Not everybody has bars on their windows. Not everybody has, yeah, I'm serious, you know, chain link fences. Streets aren't narrow over here. People don't park on their grass.
Right.
And all these things were eye openers for me as a teenager. Like, wow, okay, there's another city beyond this.
Sure.
Right. And then moving up from Hawthorne, I want to say that city was Torrance. And then from Torrance, you go up to another city called Palos Verdes. Right. And you go up there and you see mansions, multi-million dollar homes. And all that was just a huge eye opener. Right. Like, okay, there's people that actually live like this. So I don't want to do something wrong. Right. Yeah. Because if I do, I know where I'm going to end up. Because this is all I know, right? So at that early stage of my life, it's pretty much when that seed was planted, like, hey, you know what? There's something else out there. You just have to figure out how to get there.
Well, so I'm glad you went there, right? Because that's actually where I was trying to go is, you know, growing up in that environment, when did you realize or what did you think you wanted to do for a living growing up in a scenario like that? I mean, you know, was it at seven, hey, I'm going to be a gang or be in a gang. And by 12, I see something different. You know, kind of walk us through that mindset because not everybody grows up seeing that, right?
Right. So in the beginning, because that's what was around you, you thought automatically that you were going to join a gang, right? That's kind of, I want to say, a given. But that's when my parents stepped in. Like, okay, well, that's the first thing you're not going to do. You're not going to hang around these type of people because they were naive. They knew where that could lead, right? So all that, they would pull me away. If I started to hang around certain people, I would get pulled away, right? So that was in the early stages where you kind of, it was a norm. It was a normal thing to do. You were going to be from a certain area or you were living in a certain area, you were going to belong to that area, right? Yep. And it's, until I got older, right? Well, number one, my parents would pull me back. And I would see other kids that their parents were doing something similar. So I'm like, okay, well, it's not that weird. It's a little weird, right? When you're young and you want to go outside and play, something as easy as going outside and playing, right? At certain times, I wasn't allowed to. Why? Because that's when everybody came out.
Sure.
It was difficult, and now putting my parents' shoes on, it's something that I wouldn't let my kids go outside either, right? Because I wouldn't want them. If I had no choice and I was in that environment, I would try to protect them and shield them as much as I can.
Right.
So that helped in my earlier years. The older I got, obviously, all these people that I saw, you know, I wouldn't see them around. So I'd ask my cousin, hey, where was so-and-so? Oh, they went to prison, or this happened to so-and-so. Like, okay, well, doing that looked cool, and I'll be 100% transparent. As a little kid, you're naive. So you think certain things look cool, right?
Sure.
It's until you get to a certain age that you start seeing the reality. hey, you know what? That's not cool. This guy taking care of business, you know, going to school, has a vision and is following it. That's cool, right? But you don't see that, or you don't come into that realization until you're older in life.
So let's jump back again. And you know, you're now in you're in logistics and working with a company. They're looking at going to Canada. You're studying for firefighter. All of a sudden, okay, now you've got to make a decision, right? So you're kind of forced in between the aspect of, am I going to stay in logistics? Yep. Ah, I missed that one. Yep. All right, let me go back and get my train of thought there. Okay. All right, so let's go back a bit, because you know, you were in logistics. Companies looking at making a move to Ontario. You were already studying for firefighter. Now you're kind of forced into making that decision of which route to go, correct?
Right.
Okay. So in that, because listen, I mean, this is a cool story, and I want to make sure that I'm getting this right and following the timeline here. So I guess in that process of you're kind of at a crossroads, because you're now an adult, you're working, you want to go right. One direction. You're seeing that kind of posting out of you. Did you see yourself staying in logistics for a long term, or were you already seeing real estate? When did you start kind of developing this dream and this vision for real estate to build wealth and to not have to say, hey, I'm not going to punch a clock every day?
Right. So that actually happened later. During that time, it was during 2006. I want to say 2006. I had a buddy, right? 2006, 2007, that assisted a real estate agent. So just, you know, talking to him, I asked him, hey, man, what's it going to take to buy a house today, right? And the numbers he threw at me were insane, right? We're talking about 2007-ish. Yep. And I couldn't believe it. I literally said to myself, you know what? I'm never going to own a home. Like, it was real sad. It was a true moment to where, like, okay, what I'm doing today, I'm never going to be able to own a home. So what do I need to do? So obviously at the age that I was at, I had to find something that was steady, something where I would earn decent. And like most thinking, or most people's thinking, you just work really hard, you save as much as you can, you give a down payment, you buy a house, right? So it's something that was already a pattern, you know, that I saw, okay, well, then that's what I have to do. And I want to say when that happened in 2000, oh, and to answer your other question, no, I didn't see myself doing logistics, you know, for past a certain age, because I knew that there was no way that was sustainable for the long term in order for me to build any kind of wealth, right?
Sure.
You can do it for so long. And this is what another buddy at the time told me, which I remember right now, that it was just a stepping stone. Use it as a stepping stone. So with that mindset, I just went into that job, did the best I could, and just pretty much waited out, right? Up until the point to where I was able to save enough money and then buy that property. I didn't get that aha moment in real estate up until I bought that first property in Fontana, okay. Right? So that property was foreclosed. I had got an FHA loan. And at that time, if you guys remember, a lot of kitchen cabinets were missing. A lot of cabinets in the house themselves were missing. There was a lot of things that were missing in homes. This particular one would not qualify because it was missing some of the P-traps, the cabinets, the bath. There was a lot of things going wrong with it. The agent at the time told me, hey, man, I don't think this property is going to pass FHA. Well, number one, the bank, I guess, wasn't willing to do any of those repairs. They just threw it on the market, and whatever they got, they were going to get. So they had accepted our offer, and it was a coin toss. So me and my buddy went, and we put in cabinets. So when the appraisal would go in, the inspection would go in, they wouldn't note it. So I pretty much asked them, hey, man, if I do all this, is this going to close? Are we going to go through this whole deal? I didn't know the verbiage at the time. He said, yeah, you know, they're just going to take pictures. They're going to make sure everything works and they're not going to hit us on it. So it'll finance. Great. So one weekend, it was a Saturday and Sunday, we went out there, we just installed everything. And lo and behold, yeah, they approved the loan. Yeah, so it was one of those things where that's where I saw the possibility. Hey, you know what? Elbow grease, and it could happen. Thinking a little bit more, thinking outside of the box, and it could happen. You can make it happen, right? So that's just when I got obsessed with real estate. Right. And this was back in 2009 when we closed on it. And ever since then, it was just in my sight. It was like a target that I was looking at, and I was going to figure out a way to keep on getting more and then to start flipping. Eventually, I never really wanted to be a landlord per se. I always wanted to be a flipping investor. Right. Sure. Somebody that just buys and flips so that that property could be enjoyed by another family. Yep. At the end of the day, that's pretty much ultimately what I wanted.
Well, and that's what's in, I mean, what I'm listening to is interesting because you've got, you know, you've never owned a home. And at that time, right. Let me understand this. You didn't personally own a home, correct?
Not me personally, no.
Yeah, so you were renting. And the first home that you want to buy, you were so aggressive to go buy this home that you put cabinets and stuff in it before you owned it.
Right.
Just
and the reason
deal to go through. And that's what I want people to see is so often, you know, we watch so many people today in our culture that talks about, you know, here's the 12 steps that you're going to do this, or here's the 4 steps that you do this. And it's just this easy. Right. And that's part of what I'm loving about the stories that we're sharing with people, you know, that are investors and the people that do stuff with us have lived through, because you weren't promised this house. You know,
no,
I feel pretty
good. So now about knowing it. About it, yeah, it was a huge risk. It was a huge risk.
Would you now knowing do about that the industry.
Today? Well, today, now knowing what I know, yes, right, as a seasoned investor. But at the time, it was just looking at as much as I could and as much as I knew, and just asking the people that were pretty much dealing with this right situation, if I do this, you know, what is truly going to be the outcome? And they didn't answer me right away, which is something that I appreciate. They took their time, thought about it, and then answered, because they ran through the scenario in their mind that anything could have happened. Obviously, you know, anything could have happened to where that
well, for you to be, gone through. For you to be that aggressive to say, I'm willing to go put cabinets and sinks and P-traps in on something I don't even own for the right. chance to buy it. When I don't even own a personal property yet, what was there a trigger or something that says, I got to do this? What was there a certain moment or something that happened that says, I guess, you know, that's not something that you just think, I think I'll just go put cabinets in, you know, I mean,
right.
Was there something that drove you to that or?
Absolutely. So it was, since that property was already pretty much locked in, well, I don't want to use that verbiage, but the contract had been accepted, right? I felt I was there. So I had to try everything within my ability to actually obtain that property, that house. Why? Because this was going to be my ultimate escape from the old environment. And I was going to try everything I possibly could to actually make it happen. So you're right. I did see the two, I guess, angles. One, I just leave it alone, see what happens. Chances are very high that I'm going to go back to that environment.
Sure.
Or I try as much as I can and get out of it and try something new. Something that I actually wanted. What was truly on the other side, I didn't know. I just knew it couldn't get worse. So that's pretty much that moment.
For more information on hard money loans, trusted investing, and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For more information on passive investing through the DBL Capital Real Estate Investment Fund, please visit dblcapital.com.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under the California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.